Hey, ladies. I'm trying to get right. Real dog up, real fancy. I'ma look like a pinup tonight.
Alright, pre-gaming with my ladies, if I might. Let me puff on that hookah, let me sip some wine. Like a modern day pinup with my dress so tight. Tonight, I'ma drink my sorrows. Tonight, I'ma smoke away all my stress. Me and my girls about to act the hotness. Pop 15 bottles and excuse the hotness. Straight looking cute. All them looking at me, they could get the boo. Watch of them who hit us, yeah, I get a clue. Now duck face girls, it's a photo shoot.
It's time to warm my body. It's time to work up a sweat.
Go on, DJ, slow the tempo. Cause this party ain't over yet.
Yes, we're feeling right.
And I think I'm seeing double, think I lost the shoe. Ended up on the ground, stumbled on my ex for the wall I was sipping with him, I was next to. Hit up my girls like, what? It's a dub in this club, about to get some grub.
Hop in a cab,
yeah, we up to the height.
Finish up the champagne,
go grab some bites. Segment Express or some patacón. I could go for medio pollo en el malecón. I don't know about y'all, but I'm in the zone. Feeling like someone, a coffee patron. Out to the athletes and that is young. My entourage is already done. Ain't no stressing out the niggas, ain't no feeling glum. Oh, you having boy problems? Bathroom, son.
Yes, we're feeling right. Yes, we're feeling right.
City. We about to see all them biddies. Divvy up these dollar billies. Throw it in the air like Diddy. My so pretty. These strippers to Diddy. These fellas are frisky. It's the life of New York City. Hell of a night, we gotta do it again. And we ain't gonna stop till it's 6 a.m. Yes, I'm a Barbie, I don't need no Ken. It depends on women, who needs a man? Nah, I'm walling out cause I love these guys. But back up, Bobby, it's a female's night. It's a female's night.
Up and be the females tonight.
Yes, we're feeling right. Yes, we're feeling right.
Ladies night.
Get them hands up high. Keep them hands up high.
Ladies night.
Popping bottles, fries, fitting dresses tight.
Ladies night.
Yes, we're feeling right. Yes, we're feeling right.
Subject, we never dismiss big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, more. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talking brewskis is coming in live. Crack one open, Marissa has arrived. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith.
Yeah. Hey guys, happy Friday! This is Big Talking Brewskis. I'm Marissa Smith. This week we got Rodney Daniels.
What's up, guys? Happy Friday.
We've got Wally Collins.
I just want to say that Rodney waved.
we're on camera.
Yeah, right
hi,
there.
Right here.
Right there.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, guys. Yeah.
Let your fans know you're in the building.
Yeah, hi, everybody. Wow. Okay. I should have worn a better shirt.
And right. In from London, we've got Sam Rhodes.
Good afternoon, ooh, everybody. How are we doing? All right?
Good, good.
Nice. It's international now.
It's international now.
Oh, yeah.
So, Wally, how was your week?
How was my week? I just got back from doing the GameStop conference. Yeah, GameStop is the big gamer supplier, whatever store. Yeah, they have like 6,000 people there, and yeah, I do the launch there, so it's
cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Where is it located?
This one was in Vegas.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah. I've never been to Vegas. How do you like it?
Oh my God, Vegas
really?
Is amazing.
Yeah, no, I've just never been to Vegas.
Oh my goodness, yeah, you did Vegas. It's like,
yeah,
yeah, right. You will never.
It's
you will
like
never
a
sleep.
Carnival for adults.
Yeah, right. You'll yeah. never sleep. Yeah. You will never sleep. Yeah, there's something going on.
Yeah,
in Vegas.
All the time.
All the time. You used to drink on the street, which is like amazing.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Like literally, they're just selling you alcohol on the street. You want some alcohol right now? Boom.
I'm just afraid I'll die.
You gotta pace yourself.
True,
like 3
right.
days maximum.
Yeah,
by the fourth
true.
Day, you're like, I don't want to fucking leave the hotel.
Yeah. And also, the rates are not that bad either. So
yeah.
Like the I don't know if you know about theirs. They were trying to do like this high end area, the Aria,
Cosmic. Best hotel I've ever stayed in my whole life.
You stayed it for like $150 now.
Oh wow.
So
So, I stayed at the Aria one time. They have this hotel room. We got, like, me and my ex-boyfriend got like an upgrade because like we were like complaining about some shit. But they gave us this room that like the toilet literally washed your ass.
Oh yeah, it's called a bidet. Yeah.
No, it wasn't a bidet. It was like an electric toilet. I know what a bidet is.
Yeah,
this is different. This motherfucker heated up, like heated
was
up
it
your
like
whole.
One of those Japanese robots.
Yeah, that like goes like it's like a
so, like,
it, like
sprays
out yes, and it sprays into your butt.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm gonna be on the toilet for an hour.
Yeah, you just got home and wrote in your diary. Highlight of the trip.
Yeah, right. Wow. That's at the Aria?
Yeah, at the Aria. Yeah, like one of their top fours. Like,
see, an incentive right there to go to
Hello.
Vegas.
I get my ass washed in the toilet. Yeah,
there you go. Right.
So, Sam, how was your week?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I've just been here doing shows. I'm basically doing shows every single day. And then getting more drunk than you should do. So I'm kind of trying to combine a work.
Yeah, boy!
Yeah, I've tried to combine like working and a vacation, and I think it might have killed me. I've probably put on about a stone since I arrived in metric weight. I'm just loving it, man. All the food, all the drink, you know, I've been explaining to a lot of Americans in London, at 11 o'clock, you have to go home. Everything closes.
Okay.
Oh.
Which is why I think we're such big drinkers. You've got to start at 3 if you want to be drunk enough by the time all the clubs close. You know?
Right.
So, yeah, the fact that you can kind of do a show here at 11 and then still be out, you know, party until about 3 in the morning, I think is pretty fantastic, to be honest.
Well, I mean, that's the they close at like 4, but then like there's after parties.
There's after parties too. After
and then like after
hours.
Parties, like after hours can go until like 8-9 in the morning.
Oh, and literally, you're like walking home and it's daylight.
Yeah,
people
are
going,
like,
to,
going
work
to work
and shit.
Yeah. Even, like respectable shit, like going
like
to church
still
and grocery store. So, Ronnie, how was your week?
My week was good. We had the show last week, and then I had what's called a backers audition for the musical that I'm in. And Evening with Sarah Vaughan is going to be amazing. But it there was like 60 investors that like kind of like watched a run through of the show, and I was just like shaking hands and hobnobbing with like some Broadway people, Tony Award winning people, and I was
nice.
Like, wow, this is my life right now. And then after that, I did a competition show that like I. Was a judge of like, you know, these comics doing this competition show. What a good friend, Dara, she's like been on Big Talk, she won, so we're gonna have her on the show. Hopefully next week we'll be able to get her on. So so I had a good week.
Nice.
Seem like a dude who's not shy about doing a bit of singing.
No, I'm the narrator. I don't sing.
Oh,
I am the narrator.
I love a bit of singing.
Yeah, no, you don't want to hear me sing. I don't hold any notes. I snap. So how was your week, Marissa?
Yeah, I know.
My week was good. You know, I'm looking forward to the long weekend. Broke up with my therapist on text.
You can do that?
I mean, I don't know if you can, but I did. Like,
how do you do that? How do you break up with your therapist?
I was just like, I'm not prepared to make another appointment. I need to assess whether or not this is like beneficial to me. And you were unusually unprofessional.
Oh, really? Unusually unprofessional.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really? Yeah. Like, he was, like, 25 minutes late. And I was sitting there, and he was in there with somebody else, and then he wasn't going to give me my full time, prorate my copay.
What?
Or, like, and it was just like, oh, because when I got in there, I was just like, all right, so what time is this going to end? He's just like, the regular time. And I'm like, this is 25 minutes late. And he's just like, oh, well, like, I don't know, how about an extra 10? Like, because, like, I would have had 35 minutes, so then he was like going to give me 45 minutes, and I was just like, no.
Right.
And I was just like, all right, and I just left. And so, like, I thought that was the end of it then, and then he texted me, like, oh, I'm sorry, like, about my behavior, hope to see you in 2 weeks, which it's like, I just missed my appointment, and, like, you have weekend availability, you're not even asking me if I can come on the weekend, you're making an appointment for 2 weeks because it's Labor Day, and, like, and I was just like, you know something? Like, I don't know that this is a good fit, and, you know, I really need to assess whether or not that I should be coming here anymore.
You'd think your therapist is the one guy you'd really want to be sort of on time and there for you.
All the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, if you're having, like, a really hard week, and you're like, I really need to see you, it's like, I'm going to be 25 minutes late. You're like,
great. You know, great. It's I'm like, paying you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I need emotional support right now. I can't.
Right. And I'm paying you for that emotional support right this second.
What happens if your thing was like, what drives you crazy is tardiness?
Yeah. Well, it is.
Yeah, it is. That is what drives her crazy, well, actually. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like the irony of that. He goes, ooh, my bad.
Visual, you sitting there in the office like,
you know, I've got abandonment issues, like,
yeah, right.
It's just like I'm here and like, you know, first he came out and it was 5 minutes late when he came out. He's like, I'm going to be another 5 minutes. And I'm like, okay. And then it was like another 20 minutes. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
I'm just like, no.
Did you see the person that he was working with come out?
Yeah.
Who was it? I want to know.
Just like some really older frazzled woman. And like she had a cane. And so then he proceeds to walk her to the elevator. And it's like, he's never walked me to the elevator. Like, you know, it's like, oh, he can walk her to the elevator.
Right.
Take up 25 minutes of my time that I'm paying for. Not even prorate me. And then he's going to walk her to the elevator. He's never walked me to the elevator. That's no, crazy. Fuck this.
Yeah. Wow. I thought it was going to be some, like, some hot chick or whatever. And it, you know,
right. Then it's like, oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
No.
Right. Maybe, well, he was getting some that gum time.
Oh, that's true. Right. That could be his thing, too. You know what I mean?
You know?
Ooh, limpy old. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well,
bring on the gimp.
They take out those teeth. That's a great blowjob right there.
Really? You went there, Rodney, huh? You just took it from there and brought it right there.
You can always guarantee he'll bring it to the guy.
Right. That's just the first one.
Oh. Oh, okay. Let's pace ourselves.
Yeah. So, there is that.
Okay.
That's I've never broken up with a therapist by text before. It's probably not professional, but I don't feel like I need
it
to
be. Should he be corresponding with you via text? It seems a bit too casual, doesn't it? For a medical
You know what, though? I've noticed that, like, it's just like that now. Like, that's the daily lineage we live in. I have, like, all of my managers that I work for. I have all of their, like, cell phone numbers, and, like, we text each other, and, like, oh, I'm running to work late. Like, nobody calls anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you call them and say, oh, I'm running late. No, you just text.
Yeah, they'll say, why call me? Text
just, like, wait, just text me.
Like, just Snapchatting your local sort of dentist, you know.
This is me on the train.
Well, I had a therapist before this one, and like I was seeing him for like 3 years, and he died. And then I took like 2 years.
And that makes him late.
Yeah, he's been late for 2 years.
Don't tell me you were sitting there. You're like,
I cannot wait. Come on, man.
It's just like, boom, boom.
All right, go ahead. I had to do that,
so. No, it's fine. And like he would like call me at strange times. So like he would call at like 11 o'clock midnight sometimes and be like, oh, I need to like move the appointment for tomorrow or something like that. I'm like, okay.
Because I'm
like,
too drunk.
Like, right. What are you doing, Mr. Therapist?
But like try to explain that to like, because I'd be like in bed with like my boyfriend and I'm gonna go call at midnight and like and I'm like, no, like legit, that's my therapist. He's like,
oh yeah,
you're therapist.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Therapist.
As we're calling it now.
your hour session where you can't be reached once a week.
So yeah. Wow. So like I think a lot of times they're a little bit unprofessional, but if they're good at what they do, then I'm like, all right, I'll deal with it. But like, you know.
All right, so in your opinion, what makes a good therapist?
I think a good therapist is somebody that will Well, there's somebody that's on time. and someone that helps you look at a situation from a different viewpoint. Because, like, I'd say, like, a lot of times, like, I'm kind of very to the point and direct, and I think that I've already come up with, like, the most logical conclusion for something.
Yeah.
But if they can, like, kind of say, okay, well, yes, this might be possible, but then what about this?
Right.
And it's logical, and I can say, like, oh, you know something? I never really thought about it that way. Like, this is another possibility. Right. Like, that to me is, like, a good therapist.
But I have that problem, too, like, where I can't, like, if I see something a certain way, it's, like, kind of difficult for me to, like, look at it from, like, another person's, like, you know, I do it this way because, you know, that's the way I do it. And,
yeah.
So...
I find I don't need therapy. I just talk to my dogs, you know. They're really good because they're really good listeners, especially if you've got a little biscuit in your pocket.
Oh, yeah.
They love it.
Right. Then they're all ears up.
That's it.
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
Tell me your problems. Yeah. I don't understand them. Just give me the biscuit.
Well, yeah. Mine jumps out the window when I'm not home, so.
Oh, yeah. Your dog was...
What? My dog jumped out the window like a couple of
what
months
What floor
ago.
Are you on?
The third.
It was walking on the roof.
Oh, she was just walking on the roof, chilling.
Oh, I guess okay.
She needed some hurt. Right. No, she wasn't all right. She broke four ribs. Broke four ribs, landed on a car windshield. Yeah. And I had to pay for the windshield. Wasn't fun.
I just saw the picture on the roof. I didn't know all the ribs and all of this.
Yeah, she fell off and, it wasn't good.
So why would your dog jump out?
I don't know. I guess the window was like blew open, and she just decided to just be like out there chilling. Like she wanted some outside time. I guess I don't know.
Was there a roof? Like when you there's a roof right there?
And the roof kind of slopes, and I think she just kind of like lost her footing, and then just like landed on a windshield.
Oh, no,
Your dog thinks it's a cat.
Yeah, a little bit. Right, I'm getting like calls from my landlord. Like it's an emergency. I'm like at work. Like oh shit.
So it rained dog.
Yeah, it did.
Come on.
Oh, we're excited.
Oh, I got excited.
So, Sam, what's the difference between like performing in New York than performing in London?
Oh, there's. I've actually noticed quite a lot. Actually, I mean, one of the things that I found most interesting is that there's not as many seemingly varied styles of comedy in New York. Observational comedy is comedy in New York. I don't think I've seen any one-liner guys. I've not seen any musical comedians. You know, so when I book my show at home, I kind of try really hard to keep it quite varied in what people do. You know, we'll have like character acts. We've still got a lot of one-liner, quite old-fashioned comedians. We got, you know, guys who do poetry, all sorts of strange stuff going on. But here, like, the observational route is definitely what the American, well, I say Americans, the New York comedian definitely goes for.
Yeah.
So I think I've been kind of like, I've been freaking people out a little bit. I always try and I've tried to be in the middle of each sort of set because I kind of do like whimsical, fantastical stuff, and I make songs up with my loop pedal and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And like people have just been looking at me like, what is this, you know? Like one guy, I think last week I did a show and a guy said, I'm really glad that we beat England in the war or we'd all have to be doing stuff like that, you know. Singing and but
we look at comedy, especially with stand-up, as observational. That we'll see that as novel, or some people call it like hacky.
Yeah,
we call it. Oh, that's just easy to do. I think that when we do stand up, it's got to be something like out of our brains, and it's got to like take you a whole
totally.
Other.
Yeah,
other
and world. I mean, I've seen definitely the best observational comedians I've seen probably in my life in New York. There's the standard is ridiculously high.
Right.
But as I said, it's kind of, I don't know if you'd go to a different night if you didn't act like mine. Maybe you wouldn't be doing a stand-up night per se in New York. But I think, you know, I mean, my sort of view of it is there's sort of room for all of the things. And one of my biggest beliefs is if you find it funny, then you should probably do it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And
right.
The other thing is, and I think this could be a slight cultural difference. You know, if you met someone at a party, for example, and all they talked about was themselves, you'd probably go like, oh, that guy's a bit boastful. You know,
right.
Whereas especially in New York, everyone is like, I am doing this. Here's all of the good things about me. You know, really? And you'd never get like a British comedian open by going like, oh, I've got a massive dick. I totally had sex last night. You know, because right. you would never hear that from a British comedian. You know?
So you say comedians do that? They talk about...
I've heard a lot of comedians come out on stage and talk, go, oh, I've got a massive dick. Or I've been, you know, I've been really hitting out with the ladies lately. Boom, I've been doing well, and I was like, yeah, whoa. But you know, in England, you would never go down that route.
They're probably not good though. Like the ones that
that's
like,
true.
Yeah, the ones that like best. Come out on stage and are like, oh, I got a big dick. Like I don't even consider that being like observational.
No, I saw a guy. He has observed the size of his penis. He's, you know, he's yeah,
exactly. It's like only his whole. Like
being a lady and seeing a couple of dicks here and there, that some people's idea of a big dick is not necessarily that big. Like, I mean, Rodney can attest. He's seen a dick
this
or
is
two.
True. Quite a few.
You seen Rodney's
in
dick?
My day.
No, I've not seen Rodney's dick.
Oh, okay. No. We're like
he's
brother and sister. I've seen a lot of dick.
Yeah.
Really? I would never guess that.
Yeah. It's kind of my thing.
But yeah, it's really been fascinating coming over here, and I've really like learned a lot about it.
Was this your first time coming to New York?
Yeah, this is
wow. You had like eyes like this. Yeah.
And it's so funny because what I found really interesting to see, obviously all the New Yorkers are like, that's every day. Like the first day I saw a couple of like big yellow school buses and I was just like, oh my God, I've seen them in films. No, we don't have the big yellow school buses. The other thing that got me really excited was smoke coming out of the subway. You know, because I just assumed that was something they used for ambience in films. You know,
right. No, right. That's a real thing. Especially when it gets cold. Yeah, it's a real thing.
But in the winter, it's even worse. It's like everything is steaming.
Yeah. And you know what else we find really fascinating? And I've talked to some other Brits about this. Those red cups.
Oh, Solo?
The red plastic cups.
With the white inside.
Yeah, you literally have, like, if you were having, like, an American theme party, say, in England, you would have those because they're things from films. They're not things that we kind of have, you know.
Oh, wow.
No, but
every bar. Like, whatever. And you're like, oh, my God.
I steer away from the red Solo cup. Like, not at my party. It's sort of classy affair over here.
It really was. Like, wow, they're from films. They're real. Because you know, right?
Kind of cool.
I was amazed how much this city looked like Ghostbusters 2. Do you know what I mean?
Two, not one.
Not one. It's more interior shots than number one. But yeah, I just thought, like, it really is different. And I live right near one of those red phone boxes where I live at home, you know, and I always see the tourists.
See, I'd be taking pictures of that.
You're
fucking
look
stupid.
Look at those dickheads. What are they? And there's me, like, taking pictures
of
manhole covers.
Right.
like school buses. Yeah.
It's like those Americans think that's Doctor Who.
Yeah. The amount of people, man, who've done my accent at me. It's ridiculous.
Oh, really?
If they find out I'm from London, they're like, hello, governor, how are you doing? Hey, all right. And it's just...
So you just did an impression of American, an impression of you.
The worst thing is you all do Dick Van Dyke. That's what you do. But Dick Van Dyke is kind of known in England for being one of the worst British accents ever. It's just so badly done. He doesn't sound like any British person ever. But when an American does a British accent at me, they usually do Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins, basically. Yeah.
I am learning a whole lot here.
Wow.
But yeah, it's super fascinating. I mean, the loudness. Yeah. That's the other thing I've really found hard to do. Well,
I would think that London, though, because it's a city that will also be kind
of
loud.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's definitely sort of volume in terms of cars, but people don't talk to each other like you guys do here. You know, in New York, you
fuck
just,
you!
Go
fuck yourself!
I mean, I think what I've learned is, you know, if you live in New York, you just say everything you think of it as soon as you think of it, as loud as you can. And you just say it to whoever is there, just to the air in front of you. Right. You just shout whatever you're thinking. I was walking down the street when it was raining the other day and everyone had an umbrella. And this woman had the largest umbrella of all the umbrellas. And she just said really loudly, the next person to hit me with an umbrella, I'm going to slap them so hard. She wasn't talking to her friend. friend or anything. You know, she just sort of said it out loud.
It's like an announcement.
Yeah, just like, here is...
Let everybody know.
Right. What I'm up to.
That's so interesting, yeah. Man.
It was a warning.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, she can't keep a warning to herself, because then it's like, listen, you hit my umbrella. I already told you.
Yeah, right. I told you as loud as I possibly could.
You're the one that hit it. I told you what was going to happen.
But it was the irony of her having the biggest umbrella.
That's all. Because I was like, bitch, Bob, smaller umbrella. Like,
sounds about right.
It's like, bitch, your umbrella too big.
Right. You need that much protection, ho?
So much, yeah. But, it's nice. There's a lot of... I mean, it's so sort of vibrant, if that's the right word to use.
That is a good word to use.
I think amongst the male population here, there's a lot of repression, I feel. That's definitely something I've found. They will shout very loud and very angrily about things at each other, right? And the amount of, especially like Italian dudes I see sort of meet an old friend and go, hey, and like punch him or pretend to wrestle him.
Right.
It's like, just, you know, shake his hand or say hello. I saw two dudes, and they were drunk, right? And it was the middle of the night, and they were walking down the street, and one just turned to his friend and he went, man, I love you, man. And he went, fuck you! They're obviously like really good mates, but like, he just seemed like, oh no, my male friend said he loved me, I don't know how to deal with it. So it'd just be really, really loud.
That sounds an American response.
Yeah.
But it's really fascinating.
I'm surprised he was like, ah, you're fake. Like, you know.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I just think, like, because this is a city with no personal space. Like, you have no space.
Oh, no, not at all.
So I think in London, especially when people are commuting or stuff like that, you are quite closed off. You know, you look at your phone, you listen to something, maybe on your headphones, and you definitely wouldn't sort of interact with people how you guys all interact with each other, you know.
We do?
Oh, I was going to say, because I feel like you have your headphones on and nobody...
Yeah,
you're
all closed up in our own little...
Yeah.
But then you get the guy in the subway just shouting and walking down.
Right, or somebody dancing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly,
yeah, asking for money.
These very entrepreneurial sort of homeless guys, you know, they've all got their patter down. I love it.
So
in England, they don't have panhandlers, like, you know, doing
God,
their own?
No, you'd never get a guy walk on the... I mean... Ridiculously rarely. You definitely wouldn't have anyone on the London Underground like come in and go, excuse me, I'm this and I've got these problems and I don't do drugs and I need some money. You know, they'll do a little dance and then they'll put their little cup out, whatever.
Your American accent's pretty good.
Wait,
I like
that's
that.
Great. That's New York right
well,
there.
Well, the great thing is I've kind of been weaned on to American shows with a lifetime of viewing, you know, so I kind of feel I can...
That freaks me out, man.
I can do a couple of American accents pretty well, I think. I mean, I've got one or two, which I'm pretty...
He looks like he's from Kentucky.
Yeah.
When he talks like that, it's so great.
But I think, yeah.
Can you do like the northeast, like the Boston, you know, far, car, not too far?
Oh.
You know, like the fire.
What was it? Hey, I'm walking over here, you know. A bit of that. You know, you got the deep nose, you got all that sort of stuff. All the gesturing, you know, I'm walking over here. Forget about it, you know.
Wow. I love the real soft sort of northern sort of sound. I think that's really nice, you know. Because it's so like, oh, hey, how are you doing today? You having a... Yeah, boy. You having a nice time?
That was great.
But yeah.
So now I'm going to try to move this a little forward. But
right.
So now, Wally, how do you think the rest of the world sees America right now?
You know, it's interesting because I'm tripping now at listen to Sam about that. But, you know, I've traveled to China. I've been to into Europe in China. I think the farthest of China, it's so funny how they look at America. Is like, it's almost like a reality show. They think it's just so funny. You know, we take ourselves very, very seriously. But over there, they blow their Americans. They're very fat. That's all they describe us as fat.
Right.
So they blow their cheeks up and walk like... You know? So they say, oh, you're American. That's what they think is American, you know. And they just think it's a joke. And we think, oh, China, you know, we're so much better. But China, so they're almost like internally they know they got it down, you know. And it's so much money over there. I was in Shanghai and Ferraris, Lamborghinis, Maseratis. Those are the common cars. If you have a Benz, they kind of like go.
It's like, oh, you're not doing well.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. They're like, oh, if you have a BMW, like, oh, man, must be on welfare.
Only a higher mid-level supercar for you.
Oh, it's it's
a Hyundai.
Like. Yeah, yeah, right. Oh, forget that, man. That's like a hoverboard to them. But yeah, I just find it really amazing, and it's really humbling too that they look at America kind of like, you know, you guys. I mean, because their economy is like going strong. When they realize that their export is like, you know, doing so well, then I forgot what it was, like a certain time, like 10 years ago, they kind of like stopped that export. But I forgot what happened. And they start basically importing to themselves. And they realize, oh, you know what? We can do this. And so their economy just grew. And then the whole export thing kind of lifted and they start exporting. So they just money just start boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
And that's why you're seeing a lot more Chinese come into New York City because they have this money and they go to these high-end stores. The interesting thing about mainland China is that they have their culture is that there's no such thing as rude in Chinese culture. So they don't line up for anything. And so if you're in their way, they'll just move you out of the way. And they accept that in China, but in America, they don't do that.
Right.
Also, qi is very important. Your qi has to be clear. So if you have like a head cold, whatever, you got to get it out. They'll spit anywhere. I mean, like from the back of the throat and spit. Even in picking your nose is no problem. And yeah.
Oh, well, in mainland China.
Yeah. In mainland China, yeah, because that's clean and cheap. But see, now they bring that kind of culture to the States, and we don't have that. And they're looking at you like, what's wrong?
What's the matter with you?
Right. And so they will go into Gucci. They will go into Ferragamo. You know, Tiffany's or whatever, and be Chinese to the point, which is kind of crazy, that they weren't letting Chinese into their stores.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and which kind of made it kind of...
ooh.
Yes, that's the perfect word. Yeah.
It's like, ooh.
Right.
You can't do that.
Yeah, and so the Chinese government got involved, you know, and said, hey, wait a minute, what's with your retail stores, whatever. And so they're saying, look, you guys are just nasty. So what they did, so now they have PSAs now in China telling you if you're going to go travel abroad, you have to follow these rules. They do not allow They don't allow you to pick your nose. They don't allow you line up.
But like,
you
know? Technically, that's spitting on the sidewalk is illegal here. Like, you usually won't get a ticket for it, but you can get a ticket for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but in China, oh my God. We were on the, we were in Beijing. We did the Great Wall. And people were just spitting on the Great Wall. But it's not like, ugh, this kind of like, you know, me and my wife. America's like, that's so nasty.
Yeah. Right. Like,
but they're like, what? You know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, picking your teeth is disgusting in China.
Really?
Right. But you can spit anywhere.
Right.
Like, there's no toothpicks?
Yeah. If you have, like, a toothpick and you don't like what you do, they're like, oh, my God, I can't believe you. They'll freak out. They'll be picking your nose, looking at you like, that is disgusting.
Wow. Bro, you got boogers in your beard.
Yeah. So when I was in the Netherlands, they really didn't have respect for Americans because the way that we kind of we look at the other races, you know, they're like, these are all Americans. You know, these people were born in America, but for some reason we have to find our own hierarchy, whatever, to feel better about ourselves, whatever. And it's just really sad. It's embarrassing, actually. You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, in the UK, I think the big thing that you'd associate Americans with is guns, basically. There are two main things that I'd say are kind of synonymous when you talk about Americans in Britain, right? It's gun culture and your lack of sort of healthcare and your seemingly your government's sort of, you know, like, for example, in the UK, we've got the NHS, right? So at the point of service, you can be treated for whatever is wrong with you. You don't have to fill in any forms. You don't have to do any insurance. Everybody is covered. Everybody gets, at the point of care, sort of seen to. And if you are, say, a foreign visitor or something, then you only deal with it a long time after, you know. But everybody, if you fell over and broke your leg walking down my road, you know, and you weren't a UK national, it wouldn't matter. Straight to the hospital, sorted out, all of the stuff done. So we find the idea that you are so anti and adverse to universal healthcare to be quite baffling, to be honest.
Well,
I agree.
To explain that is just a money thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the almighty dollar. It's a profit thing. And well, pharmaceuticals and medical field, whatever, they don't want to lose that money.
Well, we're fighting at the moment. We have an awful MP at the moment in charge of the NHS, and he's a big fan of the American system.
Because no kidding.
He believes that everything should be privately owned because he's a very rich man who's never had to do anything as in, you know, in his entire life. So we're basically, it's the one thing as a as an MP or a member of parliament in the UK that you almost cannot touch. As soon as you say we should change the NHS, everybody goes boo, get out of here.
Right.
But they're trying all these sort of sneaky backhanded ways. We're slowly getting privatisation, and no one in England wants it. But then, of course, this small, you know, the guys who make the money want it. That's always the way. But the guns, man, as well. The guns is just baffling to me. I find the idea, because should I be allowed, for example, to carry around a vial of injectable poison? If I had a poison that I could kill anybody I walked up to with, and just carry it in my pocket, right?
Should McDonald's that be allowed? Does it every day.
Yeah, I've got a little vial of poison here. Oops, I've killed you.
Right.
Oops, I've killed you.
Right.
In America, you would not have the right to carry that about, I would assume. There would be, if you had a poison.
Well, it's kind of technical.
Technically, you guys believe that you have the right to murder people. You have the right to carry something in your pocket that you could murder someone on a whim with.
Right.
So the idea, the gun ownership debate in England is non-existent because we have none. You cannot have a gun.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Is the law. You can own a shotgun if you are a hunter, but there aren't many of those left. You know, you'd only have to be a grouse hunter. If you did, say, clay pigeon shooting, you could own a shotgun. But if you do own a shotgun, you have to fill in all these forms. You get the shotgun, and they count how many shells you have.
No kidding.
And you have to account for every single shell you fire. So if you fire a shotgun shell, you've got to mark it off, and then you'll have a guy come around your house and say, right, how many shotgun shells have you used? How many have you got left? You're allowed 20. If we ever find any discrepancies, we take your gun away.
No kidding. Wow.
We do not have handgun ownership. Handgun ownership is completely illegal.
Right. How do you kill your people?
this is what's really.
What's wrong with you?
What happens if somebody comes in and starts shooting people? That doesn't happen.
Exactly. How do you thin out the black people? Because you're like, you know, the way we do is pretty efficient.
Well, there's. They still do like to put black people in prison.
Damn, we just in shackles all over.
But like the idea, as I said, we've only ever had one school shooting in 1992. We had one school shooting, and it's the only one in British history. And the day after they removed handgun ownership from public, basically they passed this law almost instantaneously. So you are not allowed a handgun, you are not allowed a rifle, you are allowed a shotgun under very strict circumstances. And because of that, we have some of the lowest gun crime. And no one in England misses having guns, I don't think.
Once again, it's a money thing. NRA, man. It's just money. And the thing that's really crazy is that people who own these guns, you know, regular Joe Blow, whatever, how they justify having these guns, you know.
Well, that's what I find so interesting to see, crazy. Is because their arguments are so flawed. And if you look at any other country like Britain, where they do have stricter regulation, we have so fewer. Like, literally no gun crime.
Right.
Because you just cannot get a gun.
Right.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I hate to make it all serious, but, like, we had a terror attack. We've had a few terror attacks, you know. Mostly guys with cars. I mean, the one on London Bridge was guys with cars, but they had, like, machetes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there were six guys, I think, and they managed to kill a few people.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine what that would have been like if they'd have had access to firearms in an area as busy as that.
Right.
So because of our strict gun laws, six people died instead of 60 people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I, as I said, I mean, as a Brit watching it unfold, it almost seems like the NRA are like cartoonish in their arguments for it. There's absolutely no basis for their argument. And one of the things, and there's real simple stuff, like we used to have the main way that Brits would commit suicide, right, was you'd climb into a gas oven. So you'd have your gas oven, you'd turn it on, you'd stick your head in it, and you'd die, right?
Right.
I know, it's crazy to think. Yeah, it's weird. But
doesn't it get hot and then you get yourself out? You're like,
oh my God, I can't take the heat.
Hold on.
Sticking your head in the oven. Yeah. I can't I don't take it anymore.
I don't think they like the pilot, honey. No, they just like, the gas come out. It's like, but you move the turkey over and you put your hand on it.
Damn, this turkey's so dry.
But here's something interesting, right? They because of this ridiculous statistic of people killing themselves with ovens, they removed gas ovens. They said, right, you're not allowed ovens anymore.
Oh, shit.
And the suicide rate halved.
Wow.
Because they removed gas ovens because it became harder to do it. Right. So in America,
they're like lazy suicidal people in Britain.
Didn't you just think about like jumping off of big buildings? I feel like that would
the thing is, all of that stuff takes planning. It takes time. Right. It takes effort.
Sure. So laziness trumps suicide.
Like, well, I did one off myself today, but
exactly. It's like, oh, fuck. I gotta walk up these stairs.
Exactly. If you've got to find you've got to find a 50-story building. You've got to talk your way in past the guy. You know, you've got to get in the escalator. You've got to go. Up, you know,
gotta look at people.
The top, you've had a bit of time to think about it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's not that bad.
You see an old woman. Do you really want to do this?
That's it. Yeah, you've got all that time before you can do it. But it's the same reason guns should be removed from public ownership. Because if you've had a bad day and all of a sudden you just do that, like a single motion can be the end.
Oh,
of you,
man,
you know?
how many deaths that happened from you know, a mistake or misunderstanding.
Exactly.
Kids, finding guns and killing each other.
I mean, and then these cops now who are, you know, they're afraid, you know, suddenly like my life is threatened, you know, and they want to start shooting.
That's the thing that is obviously terrifying. The idea that you could do a traffic stop and the guy who's stopping you, a misunderstanding, you know, he thinks you've got something you haven't and you're going to die because you were speeding, you know, and you've been pulled out, something like that.
Yeah. Or your taillight was out.
Exactly, you know, and I think removing, I mean, as an outsider, it's very easy to say because I come from a place where we just don't have them. Right. You know? But it seems to me the argument for keeping them is so flawed.
But your cops carry guns, though, right?
No.
Your cops do not carry guns.
It's like only like I don't say special events, but like when it gets serious, they have to kind of like go to a special room and get
There's a very, very small amount.
As a black man in America, I would like that.
Yeah. This is the thing. You have to arm your cops for appropriate response. So if they could pull up to a guy who's got a machine gun.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? You can't have a cop come at him with his baton. You know, then your cop needs a shotgun in the car and a gun, you know.
Right.
And as you said, this is how you end up with guys getting shot over misunderstandings, guys getting shot through escalation. Maybe they're drunk or they act violently, and instead of just being thrown in the cells for a night, you know, they get shot. It's just baffling.
Good friend of mine, her brother lives in Jacksonville, and it's open carry there.
Yeah.
Everyone has guns. And she went to visit. She says the tension in that city, people are driving kind of like,
you know,
any public place, everyone's kind of like, oh my God, it's going to go off.
I hope I don't upset anybody.
But they have a gun too. So it's like, it could be a gunfight, could jump off.
Anytime.
How scary is that? You want to live like that?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Oh.
Just like out of curiosity, was there like any sort of idea that you had in your mind about America or New York that like changed once you actually physically got here?
That's a really interesting question. I was really impressed with how diverse New York was. Do you know what I mean? If that makes sense. Like, I always thought London was a pretty diverse city. But I really feel like the mixture of people here is just amazing. Like, I had no sort of concept for quite how mixed New York was, if that makes sense. And I think I'm all for that. And as you know, I'm from London, and London's very metropolitan, but New York's definitely got us beat. I think, you know, and you know, it seems like most people manage to get on with everybody else as well. You know, but also once again, this is just me seeming fairly ignorant, probably. But I've probably only seen about one Orthodox Jew in my entire life before I got here as well.
Then you went to Brooklyn.
I'm so curious because I want to know about their culture. I want to know about how it works. But I don't want to offend anyone by asking about it, if that makes sense. You know,
I think your accent will probably like forgive any sort of misgivings.
I don't want to be one of those guys, though, who just asks some stupid, obvious question. You know?
I know, it's fine. You're in tourist zone. Like, everybody
just
understands that.
We just be like asking weird
shit. We're just like, we're cool with it.
It's great, man. I love it.
So, Wally, where do you think black culture is going?
Oh, man. I think, I'm noticing that especially now, what young ones are taking as how it's supposed to be is what media says or what music, how the music, where the direction music's going. And hip hop is taking over rock and roll, if you know that. And the hip hop culture, you know, it used to be when hip hop culture popped, you know, jumped off, it was this incredible medium of like self expression. You know, it was Public Enemy and NWA. They're basically talking about what's happening in the streets and things like that and how you can combat it and blah, blah, blah. But I'm noticing now that it's almost like the media and the record labels or whatever are just glorifying, you know, getting high, glorifying just making money, glorifying, you know, just using women as sex objects, you know. And I'm noticing that when I see these young people kind of like that's the life they want to live, you know, they sag their pants, but they really don't understand the whole reason why pants sag, you know, and but they do it anyway, you know, and then the hip hop.
What's the reason why pants sag?
Oh man, all right. So in the hip hop culture, well, in prison, if you're looking for to be protected, you let your pants sag past, like so to speak, the crevice or the what do you call it, the curve of your butt, saying that listen, I'm being submissive. I need someone to help me or protect me. And that's allowing you to kind of like be, so to speak, the catcher. And hey, I'll be the catcher. Long as you take care of me, I take care of you, so to speak.
Right.
And that's the whole point of your pants sagging. So these young guys, they're out in the streets now, and they don't understand that, you know, that's not being tough. That's just the opposite. That's showing that you're submissive. That's showing you that you are weak. Mm-hmm. But they're thinking like, no, I'm tough, man, because I'm bad and all that. And you're seeing in these videos, and you're like, You know. Understand the history of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Understand it. But see, and so, and then when you get in these, like, and there's some, oh, I got his name, Dak. There's a couple of these hip-hop, underground hip-hop people who are definitely trying to wake these young ones up saying, listen, you know, yeah, you can make the money, but be smart with making that money. It's not showing that you are somebody by buying those expensive thing. Like, you know, if you get $1 million deal and buying $1 million ring. You know what right. I mean? I invest that money, make that money work for you, but not showing that. It is showing just like flat, you know, just right. making it rain, you know, or buying something big and fancy, whatever.
But isn't that a lie now? I mean, you're not making any money in the music industry anymore.
Say it again.
You're not making money in the music industry anymore.
Well, even if you're not making money in industry, whatever. But what it's almost like subconsciously teaching these young, you know, these young black men and women. Young ladies, that this is the way, this is how the world works, and that's not how the world works, no. You know. And for the longest time, you know, you got more respect if you spend time in prison other than being in college, you know. And in talking about street cred or whatever, I mean, one time I was on stage, and my act, I don't curse my act. I don't know if you noticed that. I've been called clean and clever, right?
Yeah.
And I like doing it. And so I was third show Saturday night. And this crew comes in. It was like, I could tell it was like an afterthought. Hey, let's go to a comedy club. So they come in, you know, they're from the hood. You know, fine, you're from. But obviously, they didn't like my style of humor. And it's always amazing when someone black sees another black person, they feel that they have to lash out if they don't like what they see. Right. Now, if there was a white dude on the stage and they wouldn't say anything to him.
It's like, oh, man, he's corny.
Right. So they get to me, yeah, you're corny, blah, 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 you know, right. whatever, whatever. Yeah. Meanwhile, everyone else is laughing. But for some reason, these, you know, these folks from the hood, they like it. So one had to speak up. Man, you're corny, that kind of thing. I said, yeah. Well, they don't agree, right? So we went back and forth, whatever. And I'm trying to, like, diffuse it because, like, you know, I don't want to argue. I don't want anyone to see me argue with another black man. Yeah. Don't want to see that at all because then it shows whatever, right? So I'm just trying to do the best I can to diffuse it, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's looking at it like, you know, I'm, like, antagonizing, whatever. And I'm like, no, it's not. I said, this is not we're doing it. So then he says to me, he goes, yo, man. He goes, man, I got street cred. And I'm like, well, I got good cred. So I said, I'll own the building that you're going to be renting. Yes. So I think that you need to understand where that comes from, who runs the streets. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can run on the streets, but, you know, I'm the one that's going to be owning the street.
That's it.
So, yeah. But they don't like that, you know. And that shouldn't be something that's not – it's not be a bad thing. It should be like, yeah, we should be – you know, we should be owning – the streets. We should be owning these buildings.
That's. Have you heard the story of OJ? Jay-Z songs, the story of OJ?
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's exactly, like, that's exactly what he's, like, talking about. It's, like, preaching, you know, like, awareness.
Right.
About,
and,
like,
and that's it. So so Jay-Z is taking that, and I'm really curious to see how the young ones are looking at that. Like, wait a minute. You know, because Jay-Z
right.
is kind of like, because
he's
the
speaking some truth, right? And like, he, you know, he's older, but people respect him,
right?
And you
but
know,
he
the
also
younger
came
people,
from that.
And you know, he right. came from that,
and
exactly.
And the thing that's really crazy about that too is because like a lot of them come for that, but then are they still preaching that? You know, once they start making that money, are they going back to the hood to say, "Hey, yeah. you know what I mean? Let's take you and pre up." And another thing too, man, is like then I got this whole argument about me being a seller and stuff like that because I don't wear labels. I mean, I don't want to sound like whatever, but I get a lot of my clothes made, right? Mm. And okay. so, yeah, and so, like, you know, how come you don't see, because you know, I don't wear Nike, or I don't wear labels. And so someone was saying, man, you don't wear Nike, your stuff's corny, whatever, whatever. And I'm like, okay, let me ask you this then. So you're dumping all that money into Nike. When did Nike come back into your hood and open up a community center, mm. open up a computer lab, yeah. you know, or going to these schools and scholarships? When has Timberland has done something like that? When has Gucci's done something like that? When has Coach done something like that? You're dumping that money into these people. They're saying thank you, and they're just
yeah,
running with
and
it.
And they don't care about it.
They don't
it.
Care
right.
at all.
Yeah.
So who's the sellout?
Where it comes from. Yeah.
Who is the sellout? So
oh.
that's yeah. interesting, man. Yes. I always say, like, I personally don't believe in selling out anymore.
Right.
I think back when in entertainment you could forge a good living.
Mm.
There were these guys, you know, who would sell out, for yeah. example, you know, and they would do stuff they didn't need to do. But I think right. now if you're a comedian, musician, any sort of entertainer, the only way you can make a base level of income is by understanding that do you want to use your skill to make money, or do you want to work in a supermarket?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And right. I really think nowadays, like, how people perceive you is almost irrelevant, because the people who call you a sellout are never going to be...
at your level.
Exactly. You know, right. And they're never going to yeah. be the people who are then...
Right, so the ones who do
yeah.
make me sell
out, they want
yeah, the ones
with
who do
their skills, you know.
Right, the ones who do make call sell are not at my level. They don't see what they you know what you know how what it takes to get there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What it takes to stay there.
All the hard work, yeah, yeah. That it takes, like, you know, the yeah. deals that you're signing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, like I think there's this idea in the entertainment industry that you turn up one night, you do a show for one exec, and then all of a sudden
right, exactly.
you're on television
right.
and you
no.
Right.
It's
no.
Years and years.
No, nobody oh, yeah. knows, like, you know.
You know,
how right. many free shows you got to do and
sure.
appearances.
Sure.
And, yeah.
I would say, man, Rolling Stones did a Rice Krispies commercial. They did a cereal commercial in their early days. And Frank Zappa, who in my opinion is like the most legit musician who ever lived, he made all his early money recording ad jingles.
No
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah. Mm. And, you know, he owned a studio that almost exclusively did jingles.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And then he got to make whatever he wanted because he right. understood.
Right.
You play the game for a bit.
Right.
Then guess what? You get to make what
yeah,
you want.
It's like you yeah. do it for the meal, then you do it for the real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but I understand that. And I have no problem with that. But for you to, you know, say that this is how life is, or this is how it's supposed to be, where you're dumping money into a company that's not giving you love mm. back, and then look at me and call me something that's a sellout, whatever.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I don't think you understand that.
Coming at it for
but I'm all for yeah, I'm all for someone making that dollar.
Mm.
I'm mm-hmm. all for that. You know, you got to make your money, make your money.
Yeah,
you do what you got to do. But if you're doing on the backs and then looking back and saying what you're doing is wrong, that's where I have a little
so
problem.
So, how do you think that we correct the course?
I really think that if we can somehow, some way, put pride back into education, being educated, you know, if these rappers, because that's what, you know, because music was my influence too. So if these musicians and even these record labels, you know, kind of like back saying, you know, education, being educated, you know, for, especially for black culture, you know, that I think will help kind of like get us to strive and get us to grow and have that self pride too, mm. you know, because a lot of that stuff, you know, is like, do we have this pride for ourselves? Look in the mirror and say, you know what? I want you to do well, just like I want you to do well. And you want me to do well.
But like, do you feel that this is, exclusively this like intelligentsia kind of, idea is really exclusively black, or is that just the time that we're living in? Because I kind of feel like, yes, black culture has kind of always been a subset culture onto itself, but we're still a microcosm of the times that we're living in.
But now, okay, so in the 50s, the black entertainers, black sports stars, black celebrities, all got together and said, listen, we're all fighting for the same cause. You could see those photos of Jim Brown with Bill Russell with I'm trying to think of the other. It's a great photo. I think with Malcolm X. They're all sitting and like saying, you know what? These are the things that we're dealing with. And you wouldn't hear Al Green battling with Marvin Gaye, you know, he sucks or whatever. You wouldn't hear Aretha Franklin saying that Diana Ross is terrible, whatever.
Now. back then.
Back then, right.
Right.
Right. Because, you know, because it was that pride. And I think we're all going for that same goal. We're all trying to get there. You know what I mean? It wasn't like we're trying to undercut whatever, especially in the public eye. Mm-hmm. Now, in the private eye, that's something different, mm. right? But in the public eye, people saw that. But now you're seeing these, you know, these hip hop artists who are doing pretty well battling one another, you know, like going after blah, 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 da, 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 going after that. I mean, he sucks. He saw, you know, I just did a diss track, da, da, da. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Come on. Let's, like, you know, let's keep that. If we can keep that strength together, you know, there's a strength in numbers and going that way. That's what I'm saying. That's why I think we can definitely progress and see where if we have that common cause. But I think it's so diluted now because we are making that crazy kind of money, and we're not necessarily have to look back to say, hey, listen, I'm going to get back to the community. I got mine. It's up to you to get yours.
Mm. Right.
So
I kind of agree with what you were saying though about how you're actually seeing it throughout black culture, but also a lot of other cultures now. As you were saying, the emphasis is much more on being famous than making something good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think this, the reason that the record labels put out this stuff where they attack people, where they go, is they're doing the base emotions so that literally everybody can get into it and everybody can buy it. They're not looking for those artists who are making great work with something to say anymore.
Right.
Because those guys, if they say, hey, you should go to college, for example, the half of their listenership who didn't go to college are going to go like, oh, who's this guy?
What about the half that is going to college?
It's sad, man.
I think it's the same thing. I'm saying like the ones who are going to college are listening to the same music. So that's that half. So why not same thing?
Yeah, like win them over.
Yeah.
But I think you're seeing it in films. You're seeing it in music. You're seeing it in everything. Everything is dumbing down to the point where it's like, can we make the most money with the least sort of effort? The labels, the music labels in particular, they kind of feel like they have the formula now. You know, they know how to do the thin white singing lady, you know, right. They know how to do the rap artist, they know how to do your indie band. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you'll get 20 of the same indie band, 20 of the same rap artist, 20 of the same thin lady shaking her butt about.
Right.
You know, because they just feel like, you know, they're not in the business of making art anymore.
Right.
No.
All they're in the business of is making money. And I think, unfortunately, this is always going to stop people from using those platforms like they used to, you know.
Right.
You know, I'm in no position to talk about black culture being a white English guy, but you know, this is the 70s, you know, what these guys are singing about is important, you know, and you've got all this stuff where they're talking exactly like you're talking about unifying, working together, like be proud of who you are.
Well, I think
and that message is gone now.
Yeah.
They had a different... They had a more unified front because they were experiencing something that people today are not experiencing. And so, yes, like the
like
artists
what?
Of, well, because like, you know, you could be selling out an arena, but then you had to walk in through the back door, or you couldn't stay in the same hotel that other people stayed at. And you might be making more money than everybody that's working there as a black artist, but because you were black, you couldn't stay in this particular hotel. You couldn't use the same entrance that white artists used. You
get Miles Davis being arrested outside of his own concerts, you know.
You know, and like, so I think that they had more unity because they had more of a sense of indignation for the same things that artists today are not having. Because Jay-Z can walk into any hotel, any casino, any venue in the world. He's going to be treated like a king because he makes so much money. And he's going to be treated the same way as a white artist of the same caliber. Because they are at the stratosphere that they're... color is less important. I'm not saying it's not important, but they're a shade of green that is not a shade of brown anymore. And they, as long as they're within that, living in that shade of green, that they don't necessarily feel the same about. It's hold on. that they don't necessarily feel the same about. Let me unify with a Kanye. Let me unify with an Alicia Keys. Let me unify with you know, a John Legend. And let's say, you know, something like, we need to help these kids move forward because they're living in a shade of green that the maybe it's a forest green and not a Kelly green, but they're still all green together.
Yes. Okay, so Jay-Z's song, the OJ song, is about that. Like, that's what he's saying, is that, like, no matter what I am, like, I'm Jay-Z, but I'm still a black man at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still black at the end of the day.
Right.
And Beyonce's formation is still about, like, she's black at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah,
like,
but let me...
And yes, they both have a lot of money, and they're, like, there's so many artists that are like that. They have so much money, but at the end of the day, the message is that they're still... black, and they still deal
with
the oppression.
Are they, like, starting scholarships for black kids? Are they paying for lawyers for black people who have been wrongfully committed, like, that have been wrongfully charged a crime? Are they starting schools for in inner cities? Are they sending water
to
Flint,
Chance the Rapper,
Michigan?
I was going
to
say they both have, like, a lot of...
Chance the Rapper is also completely diverting the system. Like, he is...
Right.
He's trying to create a new archetype of how to...
Right.
To maneuver the system.
Right.
So, yes, but he's a fucking unicorn.
Right.
But my point is that he does not believe he's that shade of green.
Right.
He still believes he's a shade of brown. But as much as Jay-Z can and Beyonce can talk about how black they are all day, all night, at the end of the night, if they saw you and I on the street, we're a bunch of niggers.
Yes, no. I don't know.
I disagree. I feel like they are black just like me and you are. Like
I disagree.
They weren't always
famous.
They're
Michael Jackson black.
Are you saying literally or metaphorically?
But metaphorically.
Oh, okay.
But right, I was going to say, right. But I feel like even Michael Jackson.
Wow.
Figuratively.
Yeah, okay, yeah, right, okay.
I feel like even Michael Jackson wasn't Michael Jackson black, like that, like, pretending that you're something else. Like,
but
he was still black at the end of the day, and I feel like
he
knows that. Nobody, like... No, at the beginning of the song, the whole OJ song that we're talking about, he says, like, OJ's like, oh, I'm not black, I'm OJ. And he's like, what? Okay. Because he knows that he's a black man. No matter how much money he has, he's still black. A black man living in America. No matter how much money Beyonce has, she's still a black woman living in America. And before she was famous, before all of this, like, money, they had to live in that reality. And that's something that you don't ever forget.
Michael Jackson broke the record for charities. He is the most charitable artist in history.
Exactly,
no,
and that's because he grew up
I get it, but I mean, like, from the outside world, that, like, not internally. I'm not saying, like, because I think Michael Jackson believed that he was a black man, but
right.
I mean from outside influencers, that the way that people relate to a black Michael Jackson is the way that people relate to a Jay-Z and a Beyonce.
Right. Well, we're talking about selling out, and I think that, like, amongst the black community, once you make a certain amount of money, people automatically assume and think that you're, like, not part of the black culture anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do a Pepsi commercial, you're not black anymore.
Right.
You're just this figure that, like, people... But you wear your black every single day. You're
right.
Born with that. That's
right.
Not something that you just take off, and you don't forget that
right.
That's, like, who you were before all this money.
I mean, that is the irony of it, is that, you know, when you do get to a certain point, for some reason, people think, like, oh, it just happened.
Yeah.
You
like,
know? And it's
like you weren't working hard
right.
Before that. Like, I wasn't, like, doing all this, like, extra stuff. Like, you know, what if you become, like, this person that, like, you get a Pepsi?
They don't think I'm black now.
Well, exactly. Right. High five.
Oh, no.
Right.
Well, you might as well join in, too.
And you know, and I just find that so heartbreaking, man. When black people do that, you know. And I have a show at the Gotham Comedy Club called the Wally Collins Comedy Cup, and it's kind of like a competition, my competition, a lot of fun. And I host it, and so at the end of the show, whatever, black dude walked out, and he called me Byron Allen, but he said it in a way of like to be like condescending kind of thing, like, oh yeah,
but he's a great businessman.
And I go, right. and the guy was walking, I'm like, I go, he's a billionaire.
Like, yeah.
You know? So like, you know, but
I think he makes more than money than any other television producer.
Yeah, he does. So, but that's what I'm saying. But for some reason they can't. You have to. It's almost like if you're still down, you're still black. You have to speak a certain way.
Mm. Right.
You know what I mean? Then okay, he's still black. But I'm like, oh man, because for us, we have to be bicultural.
Right.
Because
yeah.
I do a lot of corporate gigs, and I have to speak a certain way. But then when I'm with my friends and family, it's a whole nother language, basically.
But that's right. That's entertainment. You have to be able to, you know, wear so right. many different hats in yeah. so many different rooms.
But as a black professional, though, you definitely have to speak one way or act a certain way.
Right.
But when you're around your friends and family, you know,
you would never have a white comedian who had two different sets.
Thank you.
Right.
You would never, you know, you'd be a comedian and that would be your set.
Yeah.
Right.
I've heard from black comedians here that depending on how white the audience is, depends on which set they do.
That's right. Very
and
true.
I kind of think like, wow.
My set's completely different in Harlem than it is in Midtown.
Exactly. Yeah. You wouldn't even know.
So we're going to have to take a quick break before... Before we go, though, like, where can everyone find you on social media? What gigs do you have coming up next? Like, what are you working on?
You talk to me or you talk to Sam?
Wally.
Well, I'm on the Holy Trinity, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Wally Collins, WALICOLLINS. That's the handle for all three.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just talking about on September 19th, I do the show called the Wally Collins Comedy Cup. It's two teams, two comedians in each team, and there's an actual trophy. And they get up, and I give them a topic, and they just talk, and the audience gives them a topic. They talk, and then we do a freestyle where they get up there and talk for 2 minutes about anything they want to. And the score is ridiculous. Last show, the score was, I believe, 113,000 to 108,000. So, it's a lot of fun. We definitely been getting a lot of momentum, and we're shopping for TV now. So.
Oh, awesome.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. You know,
so, Gotham Comedy Club, September 19th, the Wally Collins Comedy Cup. Please come.
Okay. Sam Rhodes.
Yes. I literally only have one day left of American shows, unfortunately. So if you come see me, you've got to come down to your show tomorrow.
Yes.
I might be doing the late show at the Broadway Comedy Club as well. But if you want to find me online, it's the Sam Rhodes Comedy Explosion.
Okay.
Love that.
I've got some silly videos that I made with a good director friend of mine. Oh. One, apparently, which is quite good for people who aren't London natives, I did like a tourist video with a friend of mine absolutely none of the facts are legitimate facts. It's, okay. It's just me standing in front of famous British landmarks, basically improvising a load of absolute nonsense, and it's quite a lot of fun.
And where can I follow you on social media?
It's just Facebook, largely the Sam Rhodes Comedy Explosion. It's the Sam Rhodes CE, facebook.com/SamRhodesCE.
Okay.
I think I'm on Twitter as well, but I don't use it very much.
All right, cool. Yeah. So we will be right back, you guys. This is Big Talkin' Brewskies. I'm Marissa Smith. We'll see you in a moment. Oh, wow.
When we feel to leave. Tell me, honey, tell me, oh, when we feel, where do we go? The time is near.
Subject, we never dismiss. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, more. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talking brewskis is coming in live. Crack one open, Marissa has arrived.
Hey guys, welcome back Big to Big Talking Brewskis
with
I'm
Marissa
still
Smith.
Well, I've still got Roddy Daniels with
Hi
me.
Hi guys, I'm still Roddy Daniels.
And we've got V Lintz with us.
Hey guys.
And we've got Beth Maria with us.
Yeah.
A lot of
radio at one point.
Like,
should I speak?
Yeah. Yeah, you can do both. We've got camera and audio. So you can both make movements and make sounds.
And just project, talk into it. Don't be scared of the object.
Hey. It's like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's
get up on it.
It's shaped just like I like.
So, we're going to stop being immature.
Right.
We're going to
second segment.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying
it. Not yet. I'm working on it.
Yeah.
Runaway train.
So, V, how was your week?
It was pretty good. I'm on vacation from work.
Okay.
Yes, a week congratulations.
A week and yes. A week. Okay, cool. Ooh, yes. Cheers for vacation.
Boom.
A week and a day.
Labor
8 days.
Day.
Yes.
Labor Day. They're yeah. Like, bitch, you need off Labor Day too. So
yeah. Right. You're like, I'm taking it.
So are you doing anything special or did you just staycation?
I slept in my bed.
It's always
bed.
Good.
And that's how intimate the sleep was.
Yes.
It was pretty, oh man, I woke up to a lot of drool. I was in there.
Oh,
I was in
you
there.
Were a drooler.
I was in there.
That's the best.
I was in definitely like the fifth, sixth dimension. I was gone. Yeah. But it felt good.
Yeah. No, that's yeah, always good.
No, you know? Your body
I'm
needs
ready.
That.
And I'm ready for the weekend. It's a holiday weekend, Labor Day weekend. I'm ready to party.
Yeah. Okay. We're kicking it off.
I think I'm going to the Labor Day parade this year for the first time in like 10 years.
Where is the Labor Day parade?
On Eastern Parkway.
Oh, Brooklyn. Oh. Okay.
I've heard yeah. Of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Beth, how was your week?
It was good. I have kind of a half vacation week.
Oh, okay. Shit.
My schedule's all mixed up. I'm basically like on call. But I had my days just like to catch a little sun, just, you know what I mean? Because then you go into hibernation. I don't know if you guys can relate, but then I turn clear.
See-through.
So I turn beige.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no matter what, you're still tanner.
I get kind of light skin looking.
Yeah.
Ooh. I get beige.
Okay. Rodney's not chocolate anymore.
Okay.
I get ashy.
I turn caramel. And ashy.
You ever see somebody that's like so ashy, you just want to like go up to them, just start rubbing lotion on them like your mama did when you were a kid? Like you're just like, ah, what
like
are you doing?
Moisture.
Just do one of those. Lick that.
Yeah. Just it's just like,
an elbow.
Sometimes, yeah, the elbows always get me. Like I'll be on the subway and someone's wearing a short sleeve shirt and they're so ashy and I've got shea butter in my book bag and I'm just like, oh.
I want to say the Africans on the train with the open toe shoes.
Oh no.
I mean,
yeah.
No. They gotta represent. Someone gotta represent.
Yeah. With the feet out.
Feet out. Feet is white.
Feet on the subway.
Yeah.
No, the worst for me is, okay, open toe shoes, that's your choice, but if you have closed toe shoes and you just take your feet out on the train because you're just like, this is my time to air out.
Oh no.
That's some crazy shit.
But I don't like open toe shoes just in general. In the city, I feel like it's weird.
I
feel like it's just
kind
of, you know, dirty.
Yeah.
Just
walking
around, feet just open, like 8 hours of that.
That's like
and you feel things.
Crazy, like when people walk on the street barefoot.
Yeah.
Like,
oh.
You know what I mean?
No.
Yeah. Because sometimes, like, I'll see like girls and they'll like have their heels in their hands and they're just walking, and you're like, "Oh, girl."
Hey, man. Beyonce does that shit.
I just wrote a joke
right,
about
while she's
that.
Walking 2 days ago. Stage.
No, she be walking it's off like, a boat and shit, but she be doing it.
That's true. No. She's from Texas.
Hey, sometimes your feet hurt. Sometimes you really can't make it.
That's when you get those little foldy ballet slippers.
Well, you know, that's something new. And I'm so mad that's something new. No. Like, you know how long a bitch should be been wearing?
Right.
She could have fold up flats in her back?
Not in Manhattan. No. Not.
Throw those shits right in your
purse. Right, I was going to say,
purse.
Right.
Yeah.
It's one thing you're getting off a boat in Saint-Tropez and you don't have on shoes.
No!
It's another thing if you're in Manhattan.
I was in Rockaway on the boardwalk and I was like, you know what? I had to go from like 10 blocks down on the boardwalk. I went barefoot because I was like, you know, this is my moment. I don't get this moment. Okay. And it was nice. It was beachy. Everybody's in their bathing suits. It's beautiful.
You weren't scared on you wanted to 34th step on, like, a crack needle?
Yeah.
No, they just redid it after Sandy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All
so,
the crack needles are in the ocean.
That was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm more scared to step in the sand than I am on the boardwalk.
That is very true.
Yeah.
I've never been to Rockaway.
Rockaway?
Like, yeah.
In Queens?
It's the only semi-actual beach that we got.
Okay. But it's like, it's not like Coney Island is semi-beach.
Right.
No.
Who would get in that water?
Coney Island is not a beach.
You mean Chocha Beach?
Yes.
Like, no, I would...
Reese Beach is Rockaway, right?
Sounds dirty.
No, I
don't. Did you say Chocha Beach?
Yeah, Chocha Beach.
Is that Pussy Beach?
Yes.
What is that?
I am not
swimming
in that.
What's Pussy Beach?
Not swimming in that.
You see a lot of Hispanics.
Okay, well,
Okay. All right. Racism. All right. The way her eyebrows went up. You can't see her, but her eyebrows went up. She's a lot of, and there was a pause, a lot of Hispanics.
I didn't say
wait,
that shit.
But then she said it's in the Bronx. I'm not going to no beach in the Bronx.
No, it's like right off of City Island, but it's like, you know, like the nice. Condoms are always floating and it's see, like, you know.
Sounds like the Bronx.
Right. Hello.
Look at them.
Oh, poor you.
Yeah, no, Chocha. I don't need rolling like in Chocha Beach.
What's the real name?
Orchard Beach.
Oh, okay. Orchard I've heard Beach. Of Orchard Beach. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Right. And no, Chocha Beach.
You know, it's the slang for what was Chocha Beach.
Okay.
She knew what I was talking about. Everybody calls it Chocha Beach.
Oh, my gosh.
Hispanics. Oh, my gosh.
So, Beth.
Yeah.
Go on.
You're going to go into the rough stuff right away. You want to dive into one of my rough. You want to go rough right away?
Yeah.
I was worried. So Marissa asked us to have topics and.
Don't break the third wall.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I think it's important because I feel bad to bring intensity. I got like Trump facts up the ass.
We like to get intense over Big Talk.
It's so early.
No, you know, we got time.
I'm not even drunk yet.
We started late.
It's evening.
We're already getting tense. I was talking. Yeah, go ahead. Ask your questions.
Hold on. Right?
Mm-hmm. Should we chug it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, chug
this
it.
This is my only mixer.
This is
my
kind of party.
Oh, them bitches
hold
are chugging.
If I'm going to chug my only mixer, I might as well make it stronger.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Girl, you get it.
Yes, get it.
All right, so. Do you want to finish your question? I'm sorry.
Okay. So, Beth.
Yeah.
What sort of financial interest do you think Trump has in Charlottesville?
Okay, this is what I wanted to say. Trump is not being acknowledged. He's crazy as fuck. Everybody's spinning around 8 times a day with a new scandal every single moment, being like, look what he did. Look what he did. He's so crazy. Why did he do this? Why did he do this? Why? Everybody's like, how could he? What is he? Why? And I don't think the conversation of he is a businessman. He has interests. He is the only president who hasn't let go of his business interests during his presidency. And every conversation should be breathe, break, what are his special interests in this moment? Because that is the equation for a lot of these questions.
Oh, she cracked the Trump equation.
And like I was telling V right before we started, Trump's father was, everybody knows, was a real estate mogul. And he developed housing projects and middle income projects and vet projects, basically publicly funded projects that he made money off of right where I grew up. So I'm very well versed by Coney Island. So I'm very well versed in this family. And I feel like we all just need to take like 18 steps back at all moments and be like, who is this man? This man's father did exactly what he did. He used to vandalize properties that he didn't get the like deeds to. Like, he was just a spiteful asshole. He was in and out of courts for racist rental tenancy for years and years and years. A lot of people know he was arrested at a KKK rally. That's right. Become public knowledge.
Right.
It's insane. And so this is what I want to say. For this information, I highly suggest go on to, I wrote it down because I thought it was going to be important. ConeyIslandHistory.org.
Okay.
ConeyIslandHistory.org. They have a museum in Coney Island and it's like a very like, you know, learn about like the historic whatever. Mm-hmm. In there, even before he ran for president, they had a thing about Fred Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Scandal after scandal after scandal, and they directly blame him for turning it from a multicultural middle class area to like garbage fire, segregated, black on one side and white being Russian. Hello. That's right. A big deal. That's a big deal. People are even always right like, now. Is he involved with the Russians? Oh, we can't. Oh, he's not. He's denying it. So maybe we'll believe him. Maybe. No. Take 18 steps back and realize that his father has been supporting the Brighton Beach Russian community, which is Little Russia, the biggest Russian Little community Odessa. in America.
Wow.
He's been supporting Brighton Beach since 1940 something.
Right.
It's all right there. Please go on ConeyIslandHistory.org. It's just, I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of listening to every whiny bullshit thing that he has to say. I'm tired of debating whether or not he's racist or not, depending on what he says after Charlottesville. There is no question. So this is why this comes up with what is his special interest in Charlottesville. Because if you watch the full tape from that, you know, when he finally denounced, we don't like KKK, and then he was like, both sides are
right.
Bad. That one, the second speech.
This guy.
He walked off because he was done with the press conference, right? Watch the full tape. This is easily accessible. Everybody go do it. Like, you know, don't mute us, but.
After the show.
Get a pen and paper because we're about to all drop some knowledge on your ass. So this press conference, if you watch till the end, he walks off and then walks back on because he wants to sign some infrastructure thing. And then he brags because he can't help himself. And he says, I have a lot of property in Charlottesville. Yeah. And then the reporter's like, you know, tell me more. And he was like, you know, I own a winery in Charlottesville. And he goes, yep, it's a beautiful winery. I don't want to do an impression of him. I want to vomit just even trying because he's not even funny anymore. I'm done.
He's the worst.
He said, the biggest winery in the country. Now, that's a lie. He's number 11 or some shit. But it's big. Right. I looked up the facts. You can Google it yourself.
Always lying about the size of some.
I mean, someone's got a
because when you have a micro penis, you have to lie about shit.
Hello.
And I really just think this is as logical and simple as it gets.
Allegedly.
He's obviously comes from an extremely racist upbringing, right? He's all about the money at the end of the day. He sees that it's in Charlottesville. He assumes that the white people in Charlottesville are representing Charlottesville when actually it wasn't. They came from all over the country, and exactly. Charlottesville was rebelling against their presence there.
Exactly.
The counter-protesters in Charlottesville were the Charlottesville residents. But I'm sure he doesn't know anything about that. And all he wanted to do was not say shit against his special interest, which is he has a winery in Charlottesville. So,
and the Nazis. You don't want to offend them as well.
You don't want to offend them because
no.
It's he's like that's so that's like, the thing that it. Really gets my ass in a fucking knot is that the whole way this country became a superpower is killing fucking Nazis. We killed Nazis better than any motherfucker out there. That we would not be a superpower today if we did not go out there and kill Nazis because we were isolationists at that time. We were just like, you know something? We're America. We've got our own shit going on here. Whatever they're doing out there, that's their business.
But I think that's the difference. The difference is it's not in our special interest to fight the Nazis right now. It's not going to make us look like a big dick world leader because it's not happening throughout all of white Europe. And it's white just Europe happening here. All it's doing is it's against what? We can just say it's against Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And so then it makes it look like not a big deal because a lot of people don't give a shit about that.
Right.
But I think that the problem is, though, is that as Americans, we should be completely incensed that Nazis think that they have the right to walk in our streets. Like, we literally started a world war because they were walking in someone else's streets. But now they've been emboldened to walk in our own streets. Like, our grandparents and our great-grandparents didn't die in some fucking beach somewhere so that their great grandkids and their grandkids could be sitting there watching television, watching Nazis walking down the fucking street.
Yep.
Like, if I were to, like,
go back in time and raise my grandparents from the dead and be like, hey, you're not going to believe this shit. We got Nazis walking down the street in American streets right now.
Yes.
They would lose their fucking minds. It's like the whole Rosie the Riveter thing. Like, women getting into the workforce was all because of World War II. Mm-hmm. Because all the men went out to war to fight so that they could fight the Nazis. And we didn't have any workers, male workers here in America, which is what really got women involved in the workforce. Because while the men were away, it's like, oh, shit still needs to get done. I guess these harebrained women can try to work a machine. And then they realize, oh, shit, they didn't burn the factory down. I guess women can work now. And that's what like really kind of started women being in the workforce. So it's like World War II was like the beginning of America being a superpower, but it was also the beginning of feminism in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
because it was. Like women were, they were at home, they were homemakers, and then it's like, oh, you know something, we can make rivets, we can help the war effort by making the machines and the guns and the boats and the planes that our men are going to be fighting Nazis with. And the fact, it's like, I really thought I was going to stroke the fuck out watching Nazis walking just down the fucking street
proudly,
like
proudly,
like, yeah,
well, just like oh, with I'm a hats, Nazi, no problem.
The flags, like it's they went like, out and oh, it's fucking cool. Ordered a flag. They didn't make a flag,
but yeah. you understand that if we say it this is where
freedom of speech.
Fuck, yes,
right,
yes,
that's okay. That's no, how they is say the that it's
not,
okay.
It's the whitewashing of Nazis because it's okay. It's okay.
They're seen as less dangerous.
Because exactly. They're not, because they're not from less here.
Dangerous.
Now, do you know? Dangerous. You know their whole the like history. All people have to do is actually look into what they've been history. Doing to gear up for this. They have that polo shirts and khakis was a choice. It was a uniform. They wanted to look like middle class, docile, non-threatening white men.
Right. Right.
They wanted to look like they could be working at Best Buy. Right? They want to look like they own a boat. Right. When they're all uneducated, poor, crazy people.
But that's actually a misnomer because when they actually kind of like dive into that population, so most of those guys that were there were from like lower middle class to upper middle class families. Like, we want to think that they are the lower class, but this
that's
is
scary.
Also...
That's so much scarier.
That is more scary. And yeah. That's the sure same is. Thing that I'm resentful about the fact that a lot of people think that the people that voted for Trump were also ignorant people. And they weren't. And when they kind of, like, if you dial into the analytics of who voted for him, people that voted for Trump make between $90,000 to $150,000 a year. Anybody that makes between $50,000 to $15,000 a year voted for Hillary. And so when they wanted to kind
of... What about all of poor America? Poor white America that poor is white voting, America is going to the rallies.
No, they're not. So, like, poor white America actually voted for Hillary. If you, like, this is something that's Googleable, and this is what
I
want to
Google this shit.
Tell
me what I'm going to
so
look up.
So if you look at
get
medium,
your pens out.
Yeah, medium income of Trump voters, and this will start bringing you into the, like, it's a really a rabbit hole of depression.
No, this I'm going to, my acid reflux.
This is what I'm talking about. It's a rabbit hole of depression. So... A lot of people are going to say that it's the it's the forgotten American that voted for Trump, and that's not the case because lower income people, people that lived beyond the poverty line, that are not necessarily middle class, but maybe they were the lowest rung of middle class to lower class Americans, like high lower class, they voted for Hillary because. They're accustomed to having this pony show of a rich man that's going to pretend that they're going to do something for them. And they've seen this all before, and they didn't vote for him. Mm. Now, if you look at middle America to the middle class to the upper middle class, people making between $50,000 to $150,000 a year. Those are the people that voted for him, which makes sense when you dive into the analytics of, you know, 70% of white men voted for him. It's 53% of white women voted for him. And then a lot of college educated people voted for him. Now, with Hillary, these lower income people voted for her for the mere fact that they knew that Hillary was going to be Obama 2.0. She wasn't really trying to change much.
Exactly. She was just going to keep going.
She was going to try to tweak the things that already existed. And if you went
way up, we were going fine.
Right. It's like if you had 20 years of your life never having health insurance, and then finally Obama gave you health insurance, and then Hillary's like, you know something? Not only should I think you should have health insurance, I think it should be cheaper, and I'm going to try to make it cheaper. Why wouldn't they vote for her?
Right.
But if you already have health insurance, like, you don't care.
We already talked about this. It's because she was a woman.
Yeah.
Like, I stand by that to this day.
I mean, if obviously.
America was not ready for a woman president.
If it was Cory Booker running and went after Obama, I think he would have won. People didn't like Hillary.
Right. Well, was she.
People didn't.
I don't like Hillary.
People didn't like her.
I don't like Hillary. I think she is the epitome of special interest. I think that I would assume I was Bernie hard. I never thought that Trump would win. Once he was in the running and it was still Bernie against Hillary, I was like red in the face. Like, listen, I understand Hillary's the easier choice. I know that Bernie looked like the crazy old man, mm-hmm. like who was just rambling shit to you down on the
neighborhood.
That's why I couldn't get on board. Yeah,
but why? But you know why? You know why he seemed like the crazy old man?
Because
he was saying the fucking truth.
Right.
He's saying the truth. And Hillary panders. As soon as Bernie started picking up like fire, both Hillary and Trump just started repeating what he was saying. No, but I'm gonna push back on that a little bit for the mere fact that Hillary has been trying to get universal health care since before Clinton was
two.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's great.
Was for the women and children.
Yeah,
that's very true.
Yeah, so
but
like
she can't.
Bernie
kind of
took
things.
Hillary's business weird. Because like Hillary, when she was the first lady, she was trying to get universal health care, and not only was she trying to get universal health care, she was trying to get single payer universal health care, which is what eventually what Bernie would be saying later, which would seem like Bernie was the one that was like so like far out left, when this has actually been something that Hillary had been preaching since the 80s. And so and then my other thing with Bernie is that he's not a Democrat. If he wanted to run as an independent and run as a third party candidate,
he couldn't have won.
But don't try to hijack a party.
Why not? If that's your only way in.
But you can't.
We have a two-party system. You can't. Why? Who said you can't? Trump blew that shit up.
Right. But that's the difference.
It's time to blow this shit up. It's like this. They are serving us two piles of shit and are telling us to make a choice. And if you look at it, if you look at the Koch brothers, if you look at all
shit.
Yeah, you take
right.
the less
Hillary,
shitty
Hillary,
shit,
Hillary
but why
shit,
but why
though.
Should we what she for she is intelligent. She is on fire. She knows every piece of
she
what
would have been
do.
Our first
knows,
woman president.
She knows everything about every political system across the country. She knows exactly what she's doing. I think she's unbelievable as a person. I think that she had to go through the shit of being like a little good housewife for the media as
literally.
And it changed her.
That's
and
all it is.
And I think she is a product of everybody just fucking with her. Given. If she was our first woman president, I would be proud. But when I had the choice between Hillary and Bernie, it's Bernie. Because Hillary has been special interest. Nothing is more special
Bernie
interest
special
in the Democratic Party than the Clinton administration.
You know what happened
but
with Hillary?
Bernie is special interest. He's the NRA.
You know what happened with Hillary?
He's
politics,
the NRA.
Politics happened
yeah,
to
look,
Hillary.
You can Google that, too. Go on.
Politics happened to Hillary. She was eager for her thing. She had the healthcare thing.
But she couldn't even...
Before she even met Bill. They met in law school. Like, she'd been trying to fight for it.
Yeah. But she could. She was nowhere near that opportunity then.
Yeah, but politics get the best of you. You have to run with the sharks. You got to put have two faces. You gotta,
100%.
Like, she's insecure. And when it came down to it on a national stage, she feels like she has to please everybody. When she knew her main thing was women and children, and now she has the people who hated her the most were men, and now she has to act pretend like she kind of gives a fuck.
When she was technically, when she was technically probably already the president, like I already like have this like in my head.
She's been in the White House twice.
She came in a bill. She came in a room and said, "Hey, you're running for president," to Bill, and that's like what he did, and then she just ran it. The whole time while he was like in office, like that was what she did.
In no way am I saying her against any Republican, her all the way. I would have championed her. Her against, you know, a slew of other Democrats, I'm her all the way. It's always been pick the best of the worst. And Hillary is by far, it's just like Barack Obama. If we were to have a first black president, he's got to be the absolute best, the absolute coolest, the most relatable, but the most intelligent. Why? Because they're fighting because of racism. And because of sexism. Hillary Clinton is the most qualified candidate by far.
She's boring. She needs to do backflips and dance.
No,
it's because she was Tabasco in her purse.
It's because she was a woman.
Right.
America was not ready for that.
Well, that's the thing.
People they just didn't like Hillary.
What do you mean?
No. They weren't ready for it. They weren't.
Is everybody
they weren't.
If
somebody,
if
it was a man that had the exact same values, absolutely not. Because she's black and a woman.
I'd give you Oprah, but I'm not going to say Michelle.
Oprah might have won.
Oprah might have won, but not Michelle.
No.
I think Michelle would have won.
Because Oprah's a white lady whisperer.
Oprah's like intelligent. And
Oprah's a white lady whisperer.
But she's not.
She is. Oprah you is get a car. You get a car.
It's like if Oprah tells you to brush your teeth with dog shit, people are going to be brushing their teeth with dog shit.
Right.
Well, before Trump opened the gate for an entertainer to be just, I mean, besides Ronald Reagan, but he was a white man.
Right. We might not ever have a politician now after this. Like, it might just be any fucking. I heard rumors that The Rock was running.
The Rock and Kid Rock. The Rock and Kid Rock for 2020. I'm telling you right now.
The Rock would be the sexiest president ever, though.
I wouldn't even trust Kid Rock pouring me a drink. I'm not trusting him. I wouldn't even trust.
That but The Rock, though.
The Rock wouldn't choose Kid Rock.
No. The Rock is
that type of thinking that's
going to
run as a Republican.
Oh,
okay, see? Okay,
the Rock is a Democrat. Kid Rock as a
Everyone
Republican.
Would choose The Rock.
With the people's eye.
I can't be a part. I cannot
Everyone
be part
would
of this
the
conversation.
Rock.
The
he's
people's
ambiguous.
Yes.
He's like Obama. Like, I mean,
my mouth is watering. Yeah. Think about him in the Oval Office.
You think we're going to have two Hawaiians?
Can we just agree to stop? Can we just agree to stop saying it's okay for someone who doesn't even know how to pass a bill to be in office? Can we just can we at least set the bar
I agree to that.
I agree with that, but Trump.
This shows how flawed the system is that you don't have to have any fucking qualifications. I can't get a bartending job in New York City if I've never bartended anywhere. Right. Ain't nobody hiring me. But we got a president that ain't never held office in any motherfucking thing at all, ever. Hello.
He hasn't even been the president of the PTA fucking A.
Hello. Ran for office for nothing. Okay.
Never been to PTA. No. This nigga didn't raise his kids. The nannies raised this kid.
That's what we have failed as a system. Talk. Is that like we have to have there needs to be some qualifications. Yeah. Period.
But okay. So the conversation of the Bernie having such an intense lead when no one thought that he would. Right? And Trump winning, which, by the way, he didn't fucking win, okay? Because that's a flaw in our system. He did not win the direct vote.
That's a whole other conversation.
So first of all, and that's the real conversation, because you were saying he can't, he's not a Democrat. First of all, that's a system that we have created in a culture that we're accepting, but that wasn't always the way it was.
But I'll just go back to the fact that he didn't even win the Democratic primary to begin with. So, like, if he can't win the primary against Hillary, then why do you think that he was going to win against
Do you remember
Trump?
Voting day in New York City for the primaries?
I'm in Westchester.
Okay.
So
voting day in New York City for the primaries. First of all, no one was fucking out. Okay. Second of all, where the places where Bernie was the most, which is these Brooklyn hipster spots.
Those went to Trump, actually, and so did Staten Island.
No. No, and that's something I'll send you a link to. Because there's a neighborhood by neighborhood, and do you know who won Trump? I'll tell you exactly who, and I am the fucking expert in this area because I grew up in South Brooklyn, and I'm Italian. I'm half Italian, growing up in an Italian neighborhood, and know Staten Island like the trash monster that it is. And it went to Brighton Beach. Hello, Little Russia. Bensonhurst. Hello, racists.
Ooh.
Staten Island, the only Republican borough in the whole fucking five boroughs. That is the only place it went to. It did. Hillary won entirety of Manhattan. Mm. Poor, rich, doesn't matter.
Because you're smart in Manhattan. That you don't got to like her Trump. To know that she's going to do a good
right.
job.
They're smart
that's
in Brooklyn and Queens, too.
I don't understand from the rest of the country
Come
is that
on.
Trump is from New York and from Manhattan. And if New Yorkers that he comes from hates him so vehemently.
Fraud. We're like, dude, he's a fraud.
Why do you think that we're all fucking idiots when we all have lived the Trumpism that will be the United States of America? Like, we know the fucking...
Talk
the
about
Central
coming
Park.
From his fucking neighborhood.
Right. It's like, we know about him and the Central Park kids and like, they're fucking innocent and he's still... thinks that they're guilty.
Fucking ad in
like,
the paper.
In paper. Like,
well,
oh, I don't know this.
Shame a bunch of innocent kids.
What is the Central Park Five were a group of kids, and actually there's a comic. I don't know if he's still doing comedy, but there was a comic that used to be a cop that actually coined the phrase wilding. And wow. So that... yeah,
is
so
that,
like...
Is that why people are... Okay.
Yeah, so like you can look up Central Park Five wilding. And so basically what the thing was is that there was supposed to be a white woman that was in Central Park. These five kids were quote unquote wilding, meaning acting a fool, drinking, doing drugs, acting out, raped this woman.
Okay. But keep going.
And so Trump and they were saying this wasn't us. We were never there. We've been wrongfully accused. We've been wrongfully convicted. Trump put out like a two page ad in either the Post or the Times saying
the
it was the Post saying that
got no morals
that these kids should be executed, they should get the death penalty and this that, and the other thing. Well, now once fast forward like almost 15 years after these men have lost their childhood and there's DNA. Not a single one of the Central Park Five's DNA was matched with the DNA found within the victim. They were not there. They did not touch her. They did not rape her. There wasn't a fiber of their hair. There wasn't a cell of their skin. There wasn't a drop of their blood associated with this victim. They had to be let go. But they're still convicted. In order to be let go, they still had to keep their conviction, but they just let them free because this is something that a lot of cities and municipalities and states are doing is that if they find out that you've been wrongfully convicted, in order to let you go, they make you sign an agreement that you're going to keep your conviction because they don't want you to turn around and sue. Because if you agree that you've been wrongfully convicted, then you can sue the state, municipality, the city for millions of dollars for taking your life away wrongfully. So now what they do is they say that if you have been convicted of this crime and we find that you're innocent of this crime, we're just going to let you walk away from for like free. You can leave jail now, but you're going to keep this conviction on your record for the rest of your life, even though you never committed this crime.
Why wouldn't someone knowing that they're with evidence that they're
if you've spent 15 years of your life in jail and somebody tells you sign on the dotted line and you can leave, or are you not going to?
Oh, I get that, but how is this not
illegal?
Address. No, I know why things are. I don't believe in just things being legal and illegal. Let's talk about the fact that you can't bribe a city of, you know, and a public official, but we have lobbyists are legal, right? So there's always a, and I don't excuse my language because there's a better way to describe this, but there's always a white way to do something that everybody else can't.
Right.
And, you know, I know, you know, but I don't, but I'm also trying so hard to, as much as it's important to delve into the injustice, I think that we feed into it by calling each other black and white. And we use that language and actually divides more than anything. But it's really hard to find any other way to talk about it other than that.
That would be in the
but
because white privilege is real, right? And everyone could see
and,
it.
And do you know, to talk about white privilege, one thing that I think is really important when I have a white privilege conversation, and I mean white privilege is only becoming a term in the mainstream recently, and so many people are having adverse reactions to it. Mm-hmm. And as I learned about this term for the first time within the last few years, as it's becoming publicized, because I'm from an urban area and white, and I didn't even, there's this whole battle, and I'm working on an hour right now, and it's a battle through this idea of like rejection of that, because I've never identified as white. You know, I come from immigrant past, and I have a multicultural family, and I don't like that. I think of white as being the middle of a country. Point is that there are real debates and reasons why I can separate myself from that, but coming to terms with acknowledging my privilege to thus benefit the people in my life who do not have it, like no matter what. I can go ahead and talk about how that identity does not work with me, and it doesn't describe me, and it flattens me. But everybody else gets flattened. Well, everybody else is flattened.
That we've kind of
you're black, right?
Yeah,
flat,
yeah,
flat, so. Right? So how come I get to say some other shit?
Right.
So the real point is what I was going to say is the conversation I've been having with people. As I get to have this conversation as like this undercover white person, is people saying, oh, a constant argument is, oh, white privilege? Are you kidding me? White privilege? I grew up, and a white person saying this, I grew up poor. My brother was a crackhead. My father left me, and da 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 da. And it's like, okay, I'm not saying that you did not have hardships. Actually, white privilege is not saying that you grew up with money. All white privilege is saying is that when you walk into a store, you don't get followed.
Right.
So when a cop looks at you, they assume you're innocent until proven guilty. Right. And those are real. That's the main point.
That's currency.
Because people get very defensive mm-hmm. very quickly. Mm-hmm. Are we already at the end?
Yeah, we got to wrap it up.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
But before we go, I kind of want to give everybody an opportunity to say where you can be found on social media, what projects you're working on next. V, what are you working on?
What's up?
What up?
So you can find me on Insta, VLintz14, and Facebook, VLintz. I'm working on actually a web series with me and my family called Sunday Dinner.
Yes.
We have Sunday dinner every Sunday, so I'm working on putting it on camera and having some comics come by to eat. So I'll let you guys know whenever y'all hungry.
Yeah, definitely want to shout out.
Love me some soul food.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. He said, she said on Broadway next Friday. So if you guys ain't in the city, come out. Check that out. It's a fun show.
That's awesome.
Beth.
I think that the most important thing here, I am, I have my second anniversary of my show. It's called Summon the Goats. You can find that on Instagram at Summon the Goats. Follow that. And on Facebook. But, and that's this Sunday at 6 o'clock at the Village Lantern. And that's cool. But I actually think for this conversation, the most important thing is, a friend of mine is doing a, benefit, and it is on September 12th. Okay. Follow me on Instagram at Beth with Love for all of the information. But it is called Face This and Heal. It is the brainchild of a friend of mine. It's called Face This and Heal. The money goes to medical bills in Charlottesville. There's comedians and musicians speaking about their prejudice and then entertaining you, fully entertaining you. And the main thing is that, because we are all in a very liberal community, that you bring someone who does not share your beliefs so that it is education, Rodney, and unity.
Rodney Daniels.
I got some shows coming up. You can catch my fall lineup. Look me up on Instagram, Roddy Daniels, or Facebook, Roddy Daniels.
Tomorrow, I'm going to be at Otto's Shrunken Head for Merriment and Mortification. Also, check out my schedule on marissasmith.com. And remember, you guys, Putin is fucking Trump up the ass. Have a good night.
Yeah, that's true.
Talking about your name,
yes. But every time they say you, they be asking, who are you again? Your man knows, the world don't understand, though. I knew I was the streets, I see my uncle with a banjo. Cutting up the grand flow. Church? The fiend said the greenhouse we have.